This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. This summer, America turns 250 years old, and there's no better way to celebrate than getting outside and exploring this great nation. One way to do that is to rent a camper or RV from Outdoorsy. Outdoorsy is the most trusted RV rental marketplace in the U.S., making it easy for anyone over 21 to rent an RV or camper without owning one. With Outdoorsy, you can drive it yourself, tow it, or even have it delivered and fully set up at your destination. With comprehensive insurance, 24/7 customer support, and roadside assistance, Outdoorsy gives you the peace of mind you need when on the road. Outdoorsy is even the perfect option for your next out-of-state hunting or fishing trip. Right now, my listeners can have all service fees removed from their bookings in 2026 with code EMPIRE at Outdoorsy.com. That's Outdoorsy.com and use code EMPIRE at checkout to remove service fees. It's time to get outside and enjoy your summer. I've been trying underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum. Basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan & Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
Daylight breaks over the ridge. The hounds strike. No crowds, no cameras, just a track, and the hounds that bring the story to life. That's what this show's about. Dogs, dirt roads, early mornings, and the people who live it. This is Creekside Chronicles. Hounds, hunting, and heritage. I am your host, Heath Hyatt, houndsman, hunter, and a lifelong student of the outdoors. Here, we chase more than game. We chase knowledge about hounds, hunting, and living the outdoor life the right way. From bear country to back roads, this is where the hunt meets heart, and every story runs a different trail. So pull up your chair by the creek, leash up your best hound, and let's get after it together. Performance starts in the feed. Inukshuk's high-fat content fuels long runs and hard hunts, giving dogs the steady energy they need, while quality protein supports faster recovery after the work is done. That's why I trust Inukshuk dog food. Packed with energy and nutritious, dogs need to go further, run harder, and recover stronger. If you want extreme performance, you can look them up at Inukshuk Professional Dog Food or CoreyNutrition.com.
You know what time it is. Welcome back to the Creekside. We talk about everything from the woods to the water. We talk about it all. If you've been listening along, you're a part of the Creekside crew. You know the drill. Pull up a chair. I'll throw another log on the fire, and we will get today's episode started. When you listen to this tomorrow, which will be Thursday, I will be on a voyage to Alaska. So we're going to take a 10-day trip, go up and see a couple of the national parks, probably do some hiking. Hopefully we don't freeze to death. The weather looks halfway decent at this point. Do some fishing. Can't go to Alaska without fishing, correct? So this is a bucket list, and I'm disappointed because I've learned through the lack of research that I prepared for this that Alaska's got 8 national parks, and I'm only getting to see 2 after doing some more research. Apparently, a couple of these parks are not accessible by anything but a boat or a plane. So it makes it extremely difficult to knock out all 8. And if you read on it, it says that it's about a 20-day trip, and it's best if it's busted up into 2 trips of 10 days. So I'm hoping in the future there will be another trip to Alaska so I can knock out the rest of those parks. I won't be going to Glacier Bay. I won't be hitting Katmai. And some of the others that's kind of out of the way. So we're going to Denali and the Kenai, and I'm going to be fishing down around the Kenai. So I'm excited. This trip was planned year before last, and it got cut because some unforeseen expenditures. And I'm excited. I'm very excited. And even though there seems to be a black cloud looming around me, this past week, the water quit working. So spent the evening trying to trace down and figure out where it was coming from. Was it coming from the holding tank? Was it the pipes? Was the relay switch? Like, spent all evening to find out the next day that the wiring in the pump shaft, the casing itself, had went bad. And the pump's 27 years old, so I ended up replacing the pump. And the wiring were up and running. Minor setback, but it's all good. This past weekend, I want to talk about this a little bit. I don't think some people understand, or maybe they do, and it's just not a reality because it's not something that they have to deal with all the time. And anytime you have to deal with this situation, it's emotional, it's humbling, it's trying for sure. But you know, in my profession, we always say that when we walk out the door, there's always an element of uncertainty that most people never have to experience. You know, a traffic stop, a domestic, or what seems just like an ordinary call, a well-being check. And I want to talk about a well-being check because this is what's led me into this conversation. This past weekend, actually Friday night, 2 deputies, local deputies that are a county over from here, they got shot on a well-being check. So well-being means that somebody calls in and says, hey, my family member, my friend, somebody is not feeling right or acting right, or I can't get in touch with them. Something like that. It's just a simple call. But it's not. So these 2 deputies went down to not a secluded area, but an area that's off the beaten path to do a well-being check on an individual. A family member called it in, and they end up getting shot. And why I'm telling you this is because the deputy that ended up passing away, I do know. I teach at the local academy. He said in class when I taught class, and last year, you guys know I teach a tactical tracking class. He was one of my students in the tracking class, so I know this individual. And, you know, a lot of times, I think it goes unsaid that we have to run into situations, and they didn't even know this situation occurred. We run into situations that most are running away from. You know, we're making split-second decisions in unpredictable environments. You know, this profession demands courage, consistent awareness, the willing to accept risks to serve our community. And while most of our shifts end without an incident, that didn't happen this week. And the other officer got shot in the vest and in the side. He is okay, but I am sure that this is going to take a mental toll on him for what he saw. So I say this because it hits home. You always say it's not going to happen here, or that things like that don't happen around here. We live in a nice, peaceful place, and we do. You know, the area I live in is generally very a good place to live. And if you look at the national average, our crime rates are low compared to, of course, the bigger cities. And the more people you have, the more chance you have for crime. So I have to say my heart hurts. It hurts for the family. It hurts for his brothers and sisters that wear the badge, his community. Because when this happens in a small community, it affects everybody. It affects everybody. So I know you say your thoughts and prayers are with the people. I have texted many individuals in that area that I have worked with or have a relationship with just to check on them to make sure they're okay. And I always offer, if there's anything I can do, please let me know. And most people never follow up on that, but I want them to know that I'm thinking about them and that they're not the only ones that are hurting from what happened Friday night. So if you have law enforcement in your family or your friends, reach out and check on them. Make sure they're good. And tell them how much you appreciate what they do. Because sometimes it goes unsaid and it goes unnoticed. So I'll try to move on past that. Last week, we talked about the differences in the big game hounds and the competition hounds. Both in their own right are equally as talented as good hounds like there is, you know. But this is a topic that keeps coming up over and over, you know, is bloodlines. And you hear people talk about certain crosses and a certain family of dogs. And, you know, they talk about names in the pedigree like they're talking about legends. And I'm going to name a few of those today. But somewhere along the way, a lot of hunters started assuming that a good hound was just a good hound. And while there's some truth to that, the reality is it's more complicated. What is a breeder trying to produce today that can influence what the hound becomes generations down the road? And are we actually doing that? A dog bred to consistently win in competition hunts, I said it last week, may not be bred the exact same traits in mind as a dog that is expected to trail, bay, stay on a bear for hours in rough mountain country or the swamps. Our good friend Nick and Sarah up in Canada, Nick texted me yesterday, and they stayed after a bear for 12 hours Friday, I think, and he ended up losing one of his good dogs after that amount of time to a mean bear. And, you know, I said this last week, you know, we're dealing with an apex predator. And you have to understand, just like the old timer told me years ago, I'll repeat it, that every time you turn these dogs loose, you just don't know if you're getting them back. And then we get complacent because, you know, time after time after time, we do get them back. And then there's that one time they don't come back. So it happens. But today we're going to talk a little bit about the bloodlines. And I will just put it out there. I do not keep up as I should with a lot of the newer bloodlines. I can tell you some names in those bloodlines, but I know that if they're striving for that certain type of dog, it's not what I'm looking for. It's completely opposite. I just stated what works in one world may not work in the other. So let's talk about it. Several people, I actually think Mike Kemp posted a post last week, maybe, and it could have been the week before. It's been busy at work, so I've had a hard time keeping up with things, especially getting ready for this Alaska trip. But he talked about Joe House and House's Clint. And I know from my experience, and we're going way back, we're going generations back, right? Years back. Like if I had a dog that had Clint in their bloodline, I usually come up with a pretty good trail dog. And Lipper was a granddad of my ring dog that you hear me talk about quite often. House's Lipper. And I can tell you that in some of the dogs that I have here today, which ring goes back to 1, 2, 3, 4 of them, in that pedigree, you have Lipper. You have one of the female, the kitty female that was Frosty's mother, went back to Finley River Nighthawk, world champion, right? Sackett Jr. was in my dogs really heavy, and it still comes out today. I've had dogs out of Sackett Jr., son of Sackett. Rock River Stone, we talked about that last week. And those dogs were always nice dogs. And when I look at a pedigree, for me, I still want to go back to that stuff because I knew what it produced and I knew what I had. So even though my chief dog, my Pearl, Hootie and Hart, we're looking at several generations. So Chief and Pearl go back 5 generations. So Buster's Pearl's daddy, and I'm just kind of giving you the rundown here, but I want to talk about the bloodline. That's why. Buster is Pearl's daddy. Buster was out of Cannon and Abby. Cannon was out of Kitty. And my Rock River Sackett Jr. dog that I called Pooh, y'all heard me talk about him. And Kitty was, her granddad was Finley River Nighthawk. So that's Pearl's, that's on the top side of Pearl. And then I bred her back to a great-grandson of Ring. So my top side is loaded up with that. And then Hootie and Hart go back 5 generations, back 4 generations back to Ring. So that's the stuff that I'm looking for. That's what I want in my bloodline. And it's hard to find because you can't find that close anymore. And what does everybody always say? When you get past that 7th generation, it's like playing craps. Like you just don't know. You get in that 1 to 7 generation, you're probably getting some of it. And I do know that a lot of my guys down on the coast, they're hunting. They like some of the wipeout dogs. The White Cloud dogs. And they're mixing that in with some of their stuff. And I do know that my buddy Brian down in North Carolina, he has got a pup out of some of the newer lines of dogs or the newer names. They're all the same lines, I'm assuming. If you go back far enough, they got to be together. He's got some of the stuff. I think he said he had a Mojo dog pup or a Cash pup. And they're too young to tell what you're going to get out of it. Are we going to get that that solely independence. I'm not going to pack with other dogs. Are you going to get that? Go yonder, be by yourself. We don't know. They're not old enough to know yet. I don't think the dogs are a year old. But me as a big game hunter, that's the traits that I'm not really looking for. Yes, each to their own. They're exceptional dogs on both sides, right? And there's plenty of hounds that can do a little bit of everything. I'm not saying that. I'm not trying to ruffle everybody's feathers, because I give credit where credit due. These guys aren't winning these hunts if they don't have a good solid dog. I mean, you look at Randy and John Strickland, like, you know, Ann's winning forever, everywhere, everything she's in. So you got to give credit. That's you got to give it where it's due. But that's not what I'm looking for. I don't know what that dog would look like in the big game side of things. I have no clue. And I will say that over the course of over the course of 10 years, I have had dogs filter in that I have tried out of straight, I want to say competition, but let's just use straight papered, you know, straight papered dogs. And I've not had very good success with them. And I'm not saying that that's because they're not any good, because if you follow back to some of the litters, they turned out really well. It just so happens the one that I ended up with didn't work out for what I needed it for. So over the course of 10 years, you're looking at probably 3 or 4 pups here and there. And I know that, you know, if you look at, Doug DeVost and Kirk Rogers, they don't like the unpapered dogs, and that's okay. I wished all mine were papered, but it just so happens that what I like and what's working for me, I've had to do some mixing and matching to come up with what suits me and my area and my hunting style and my handling style. Like all that goes into it. And I hope that one day, you know, I can add back to that. But I do single register my dogs. That way I can keep up. Well, I know, because they're mine. I can tell you their bloodlines back generations. But when other people get my dogs or end up with a dog, they don't know, because there's no trail of it. So I do like to single register them so there is a paper trail, so you can look back and see what it is or what it looks like. And I would be interested if any big game hunters out there are running straight competition bred hounds or pups out of those hounds in the big game world. I mean, Finley River, my dogs go back to some Finley River stuff. Some of my better dogs have been out of Finley River stuff. And I see a lot of people posting Finley River, and I know that they're using them. And like I said, my four dogs down here, or two dogs down here for sure, has got some Finley River in them, because they're in that 5 and 6 generations of that pedigree. So I see that name. I know that my buddy Forrest has got 2 registered Finley River dogs that he got from Trent. And the one dog was really young last year, and the dog was doing really well. I mean, he had a lot of natural ability. I can't tell you about his speed yet, because he hasn't matured, right? He's a puppy. You know, he was 8, 10 months old last year. But the dog used his nose. He was a natural tree dog, had a really good mouth. He's got a good mouth on him, and Forrest actually went and bought a brother to him. because he liked him so well. So there's some registered dogs. And I haven't looked at the pedigree straight up to see how far back some of the older stock is, but I know they're straight Finley River. So I did like the dog, and that's a straight paper dog. So it's interesting. It's interesting to see that and to how would they? And if you guys are hunting straight comp dogs on big game, please send me a message, DM me, shoot me an email. I'm very interested in what you're seeing, what you have, and if there's a future for that breeding of those dogs for what you're doing. Because like I said, I'm going to have to make some crosses. I've got a cross right now. I got a female due at the end of June that I'm very excited about. And then I've got two other females that in the near future, I want to get bred. And one of them, I want to breed straight back to a registered male. And here we go. I don't even know where to go to. Like, I don't know what's producing. I do. Let me rephrase that. Not that I don't know. I know where I want to go. I know what I'm looking for. It's just, where is that hound at? That's what I need to know. So if you guys are hunting those dogs that are, you know, a generation or two or three out, I'm interested. Like, I want information. I want to be able to research it and look into it. And I know that George Lambert posted this last week about, does a pup with that you pay $1,500 for turn out to be a better dog than the one it was given to you? And it was interesting. It was an interesting post and comments and thought process that if you're paying $1,500 for a puppy, then you're putting more time and effort into it because you're invested. Like, you're invested in that than you would if somebody just give you a pup. And I know in the recent past, I haven't sold any pups. I've been, you know, letting my hunting group have them. And kind of what they're saying is true. You're giving people a high quality dog, and maybe they're not putting the time and effort into it. Are they giving it a fair shake? And what your expectations is of a fair shake may not be what their expectations is of a fair shake, right? For short. So that was an interesting post that George put up. And I think he has a point that when you got skin in the game, when you got some greenbacks going, like, you may spend a little more time and give that dog extra effort than you would the one that you don't have to. And my mindset's always been, doesn't matter if it's $0 to whatever, are you giving the animal, are you giving that dog a fair shake? Are you making sure that you give him every opportunity, put them with game, give them time to mature, understand where their maturity level is, and they may be a little slower, they may be a little faster. Give that dog a fair opportunity to see if those traits come out. And we all know that if the dog doesn't have the heart and the desire, you can't do anything with that. We all know that. That's a non-negotiable. We can't argue it. The dog's got the heart. He'll figure it out. The dog doesn't. Yeah. You can't melt him like butter and pour him on that hot steak. He's just not going to have it. So I thought it was interesting. I wanted to go into more back and forth on it, but I just decided that there are great dogs in both worlds. And because I don't competition hunt doesn't mean that I shouldn't see what the dogs are. And because I don't bear hunt, if I'm a comp dog, or a comp hunter that I see what the dogs are. I mean, we all know that big game hunt, what it takes to make a truly good hound. And it's not easy. It is not easy. Like I said, I've got a kennel full of dogs. I got a couple of hounds that, right? And I think there's a big difference there. I'll leave you guys with that. We'll be back from Alaska in a week or so. Hopefully we have some great stories, especially on our float trip, fishing for king salmon and Chinook and whatever else I can put in a boat. I don't like flying. I will tell you, I do not like to fly. I hate it. But sometimes it's a necessary evil, right? I'd rather get in the truck and drive, but that's just too long of a drive. So you guys enjoy next week's episode, and we will catch you then. That's going to be a wrap for this week's episode of Creekside Chronicles. We appreciate you spending your time with us, whether you're in the truck, in the woods, or sitting by the creek just listening along. Thank you for walking this trail with us. And we got to say thank you to W Supply for hosting the podcast and supporting everything we do. Be sure to check them out and go to wsupply.com for all your hound hunting needs. Until next time, keep your dogs fed right, those leads tight, boots muddy, and we'll see you at the tree.
Tailgate drops before the light, coolers packed and the rig sitting right, tracking collars charged, beeping green, boots in the bed and the rifles clean. Dog box rattling, engines hum, we're chasing bear till the day is done. Old Ring barking like he knows what's near, nose to the wind, tail full of cheer. From the Virginia mountains to the Carolina clay, we're burning fuel and miles each day. Every turn's another tale, through mountain mist and paper trails, we see the sunset red in Tennessee. Rise through the fog. Chasing bear. Rest stops few, the roads are long, but the fire in our hearts still burns strong. Wisconsin mornings cutting crisp and clear, Canada's wildwoods drawing near. Still got states we ain't run, but that hound dog fever won't let us quit. We see the sun. Chasing bear. Gas station coffee, Alpha XL on the dash. Another back road, another bear track. Friends made fast and stories told slow. Under stars where only hunters go. We see the sunrise gold in Canadian air. It sets on a trail down in Appalachia. Packing steel and leather, grit and care, we're built for the road and chasing bear. So load the dogs and slam the gate, there's a trail ahead, we won't be late. From dawn to dusk, we're always there. chasing them bears.